So last week I gave a talk on the topic of skillfulness with the idea that skillfulness is one of the key concepts in the teachings of the Buddha, that the whole enterprise of what the Buddha was trying to teach was done through the vehicle of avoiding states of mind, activities of body, which are unskillful, and promoting and cultivating those which are skillful. And I mentioned that synonym for the word skillful could be helpful or healthy. So it's to avoid unhealthy things, unhealthy qualities of mind, and develop the healthy ones or the helpful ones. And one of the key helpful, healthy, skillful qualities of mind, activities of mind, in the teachings of the Buddha, is love. And this morning I'd like to talk about love a little bit. Not that I'm an expert, but I can, you know, a little bit talk about it. And if you go back again to look at the teachings of the Buddha, you find remarkably frequent mentions of the importance of love, and an expectation that his monastics, the monks and nuns that the Buddha had, that they were to cultivate loving kindness as a foundational practice, foundational attitude of mind all the time. It kind of is, this was in the background. And in contrast to other, according to the Buddhists, and the Buddhist texts that survive, in contrast to other ascetic or renunciant people of their times, the Buddhist monks stood out as being happy and peaceful, kind of radiant people. They weren't grim about their practice. They weren't starving themselves and being kind of emaciated. And but there was a kind of this buoyancy that was described. And one of those qualities, I think, is the loving kindness, making that a frequent abode, a frequent place where the mind lives, where the heart lives. And when people start doing mindfulness practice, which is another one of the fundamental practices of Buddhism, one of the things we're expected to be attentive to, noticing, is what is going on in our minds, what's happening with us. And one of the great questions you can ask yourself all day long is, where is your mind right now? What is your mind up to? You must be in possession of your mind at all times. Unattended minds should be reported to authorities immediately. Unattended minds will be hauled away. No. Unattended minds will haul their owners away at their owner's expense. So to know where your mind is, what's going on. And if you start noticing that and paying attention to that, then you'll start noticing some of the frequent patterns of what your mind is caught up in, concerned about. And some of the things that the mind is caught up in, with either little analysis or some analysis, you realize this is not helpful or healthy. Certainly the endless repetition of the mind is not particularly helpful. But also some of the trains of thought, some of the attitudes that the mind is concerned about, is not very helpful or healthy to have on a regular basis. To be caught up in thoughts or attitudes of ill will or hate, to be caught up in thoughts and attitudes of desire and wanting, to be caught up with thoughts of revenge, or caught up with the thoughts of fear and apprehension, planning, is not so useful. And so what is our attitude towards this mind? When we start noticing what's going on in the mind, what's our attitude? How do we relate to it? And Buddhism says is you don't have to leave the mind as it is. You don't have to just kind of, in some kind of passive way, accept the mind. This is the way things are. My mind has a mind of its own. My job is to just somehow get by, mindfully get by with the mind that I have. But but rather, this idea of developing the skillful means we kind of, you can take some some responsibility for what your mind is up about, what's going on in your mind. And it's possible to change the direction of your mind, your thoughts, your attitudes, your concerns, from those which are not helpful and healthy to those which are helpful and healthy, skillful. And some people might protest and say that that's manipulating the mind. It's kind of artificial. That a natural state of enlightenment, a natural state of being, just allows the mind to do whatever it wants. Well, that's fine. However, if you have that attitude, you should be very honest about what your natural mind is really about. And then you can ask yourself, is what your mind is about right now, is it really so good? Is it really beneficial? Isn't there better things to do? And I look at my mind. There are times when I look and say, you know, there are much better things for me to be doing right now than what it's up to right at this moment. Sometimes it doesn't take a lot to redirect the mind to engage in something more helpful and skillful. So it could be something as simple as there's some kind of social situations, like maybe the airport or the freeway or long lines at Safeway or something, where the unattended mind might start complaining, judging other people. How could they have bought so many chocolate chip cookies? You know, don't they know that, you know, they have so many zits already? Don't they know, don't they know that chocolate chip cookies, you know, that they you know, and on the mind goes, right? And so I don't think that in the great scheme of things, it's particularly beneficial to be judging people's choice of cookies to buy at Safeway. And so you could watch, you know, so maybe the first judgment was okay, the second, the third, you know, and, you know, it's not so useful. And so it's possible then to shift the mind and see, is there some other way of relating to this person, the situation, which is more helpful for everyone concerned? And one of the things that's helpful for everyone concerned is to have some feelings of love or kindness or goodwill towards the other people. Now, how do we do that in such a way that it's authentic and sincere? I used to be somewhat suspicious, very suspicious, of the Buddhist teachings on loving kindness because it seemed artificial. It seemed like something you're supposed to conjure up. And I assumed that love is something that is either there or not there. It's a natural state. And if it's artificial, then it's not real love. But it turns out that because it's a state of mind, we don't have to leave it to chance how much love there's there. We can create the conditions so that if we want to call it natural state, the natural state is more likely to bubble up and arise. So it can be as simple as if you live a harried life, very busy, stressed out life, then there's very little room for some of the helpful, healthy qualities of mind which might have a chance to bubble up in a healthy environment, kind of naturally bubble up. And I've seen that in myself, that if I am stressed and in a hurry, it doesn't occur to me to feel thoughts of goodwill and kindness to people who are interfering with me at the toll booth. You know, I need to get somewhere, and suddenly, why are they taking such a long time? You know, they should be finished now. They should have paid their money. Why are they still sitting there and talking to the toll booth operator? You know, and it doesn't occur to me to think kind thoughts to them if I'm harried. But if I'm relaxed, have all the time in the world, feel like very at ease, then, oh, that's interesting. Well, maybe they're friends, or maybe there's a nice thought going on there. Maybe they're lost and they're asking for help. And, you know, so I can easily kind of switch to have more sense of goodwill for the person in front of me at the toll booth if I'm relaxed. So if we're relaxed or at ease, we give much more opportunity for love or goodwill to bubble up. If we don't have it, if we're stressed out, it's not going to be there very often. Now, I've noticed in some environments like Buddhist monasteries, one of the kind of problems in Buddhist monasteries is that people fall in love with each other much too easily. At Tassajara, for example, because they're so relaxed. Relatively. And they're feeling very open. It's like you're practicing all the time. You're very open, very vulnerable, you know, and very kind of your guard is down, you're open and relaxed, and in that kind of state, it's easy to kind of fall in love. And now it's hopefully not one of the worst problems people can have, falling in love too easily, but certainly it requires some wisdom, you know, when we, you know, this happens. So what I'm trying to say here is that love or loving kindness doesn't have to be left to chance, but it's something that can be, you can create the conditions for its arising. If you feel it's valuable, you can create the conditions that's more likely to arise and surface. In addition to that, it can be evoked intentionally. And so not only can you create the conditions that are more likely to be there, but you can actually, develop the capacity to evoke it on a moment's notice. It doesn't have to be something that just chemistry, something like that. So I would say, in looking back over the teachings of the Buddha, that Buddhism is a religion of love. It is not often characterized that way. To some degree, maybe the Dalai Lama characterizes it that way when he says, my religion is kindness. But when you say that, you know, Buddhism is a religion of love, then you have to define what love means. And since freedom is the measure, the goal, the purpose of all of Buddha's teachings, then love somehow has to live in relationship to freedom. And so love is Buddhist love, the love that's championed in Buddhism, is characterized by quality of freedom. Or to say it inversely, it's the absence of love. It's not love which is characterized by clinging. So love which is characterized by freedom is championed in Buddhism. Love that's characterized by clinging is not. And so there's a wide range of what human beings call love, what here in English we call love. And there's a lot of different qualities that come as part of love. And part of the task of mindfulness practice is to notice what we bring together in a love, not to take it as a given. This is just love. You know, love is great. That's what the songs say. But rather to look at it more carefully. And what is actually going on? Am I free? Is there clinging in this state of love? And one of the interesting things to notice, I believe, in mature Buddhist practitioners, you find it in the records of the ancients, ancient Buddhist masters and modern Buddhist masters, is sometimes their loving kindness is quite strong. And it kind of, some Buddhist teachers are quite characterized. People say, oh, that person, you can kind of feel the loving kindness is there. But it's a loving kindness that is a love. It's a strong movement to love, but there's no movement to want to be loved. And this is a very important distinction, because I think for many people, the whole association they have with love is they would like to be loved. They might have love. They might have warmth, appreciation, delight in someone else, but a big part of it. Is desire, wanting something in return, wanting to be appreciated, wanting to be seen, wanting something, wanting to be loved in return. And the whole emphasis in Buddhism is not, in relationship to love, is not being loved in return, not being loved. The emphasis is on loving. And it's almost as if, from the Buddhist point of view, it's so important, the idea of loving kindness, it's almost as if there's a biological urge to love, but not one to be loved. Now that's a strange thing to say, because a lot of people associate love with biological urges of the physical type. But there maybe is an innate movement in a healthy mind to want to love. Now if you live your life in a dark room, and you want to see, maybe it makes sense to go around looking for someone who has light, who can, you know, has a light, they're carrying a light so you can see, because you don't have the light. But if you hold a light, then you're not looking around for someone else to bring the light to you. So in the same way, if you're filled with this kind of warmth of love, loving kindness, of goodwill, that's kind of like a radiant force within you flowing out, then there's no need to look for that radiant force from someone else to come in towards you. So the idea is to kind of fill yourself with a sense of goodwill and kind of a generous state of being. So the forms of love in Buddhism that are considered, that are connected to freedom, kind of the forms of love which are most central to Buddhism, are called the Brahma Viharas. And the Brahma Viharas is sometimes translated into English as the divine abodes, or the sublime abodes, or sublime dwellings. And the reason that why it's called Brahma Vihara is that in Buddhist cosmology, or mythology, or whatever, there are levels and levels of heavens. And heavenly realms are characterized by bliss, by joy, delight. And the higher up you go in these levels of heavens, the more bliss you get, until you come to the level of Brahma. And Brahma is said to live continuously in a state of the bliss or delight or joy of loving kindness, sympathetic joy, compassion, and equanimity, the four Brahma Viharas. And so this characterizes the realm of Brahma. So to live like Brahma, to dwell like Brahma, you dwell in these states of loving kindness, sympathetic joy, equanimity, and compassion. So it's some people in English now are translating the Brahma Viharas as the divine abodes, which resonates for some people very well with kind of Western theistic thought. Oh, you know, we have something divine in Buddhism too. Isn't that great? We have love. That's the divine thing in Buddhism. And some people who don't like the, don't care for theism, why are these Buddhists doing bringing divine in? Please. But the point I'm mentioning here is that these Brahma Viharas are elevated in Buddhism to a very high degree, and the state of bliss or delight is said to be comparable to something, mythically or not, to the delight, this verified delight or joy, that of a Brahma, great God. So four types: loving kindness, love. Loving kindness, which has the word love in it, compassion, which Buddhists take is a very important form of love, appreciative joy or sympathetic joy, which is a kind of a joy that comes from appreciating the successes, the well-being, the delights of other people. And then a very peculiar form of love for Buddhists that Buddhists call equanimity. And I think many people in the West don't associate equanimity with love, because it has suggestions of being indifferent or kind of aloof rather than, you know, warm. But the association with love can be made when you call it grandmotherly love. And a grandmother, at least the archetypical one, loves the grandchildren. However, the grandmother has raised kids herself, and so she's seen it all. And so she's not going to be frazzled or get upset by some of the things the grandchildren do. So they're just going to stay balanced, stay even in that warm, loving relationship with the grandchildren. And I can tell you that the difference between a first-time parent and the grandmother, in terms of equanimity, it can be quite remarkable. And so grandmotherly love, some of the equanimity. So the kids come and say, "I hate you." You know, the grandmother, this is what little kids do that. 4-year-olds will say that. Because 5 minutes later, they'll say, "I want to marry you." You know, and if you get caught by that, the grandmother's not going to get caught by it. Or if they scrape their knees on the playground. "Oh, no. My poor baby. Deformed for life. How could this be? I failed as a parent. I wasn't watching. I wasn't hovering and being protective." And the grandmother, "Look at that. It's about time they scraped their knee." It would have been kind of, strange if they didn't growing up. And so the grandma's there and takes care of the kids and loving, but he doesn't get caught up. So equanimity is a form of love. So the primary one in the Theravada tradition, the early Buddhist tradition, is loving kindness, called metta. And one of the reasons why it's primary is it's considered to be the foundation for the other three. It's kind of like the base. So it's a feeling of goodwill for others, or for oneself, feeling of goodwill. That from that base, if that goodwill encounters someone who's suffering, that goodwill morphs into compassion. And compassion meaning wanting, compassion is a movement, a desire to want that person to become free of the suffering they're having. If that basic goodwill encounters someone who is having a great time, not any great time, but say they're having some great success, some wonderful things happen in their life, some great joy or something, then that goodwill morphs into sharing in that joy, celebrating with them. And if that goodwill encounters a situation where there's nothing much you can do, it doesn't make sense to, compassion doesn't really make sense because you can't really do anything for the suffering, or it's not really a time to rejoice with them for what they're doing. And so the only possible way of manifesting that love is through equanimity. So some people make terrible choices in their life, and you try your best to help them. But you have to realize at some point that even with all the help and care and concern you have, that they are making their own choices. And so there can be kind of a grandmotherly attitude towards them. Well, this person's responsible for their own choices, so I'll stay balanced with it. But the warmth is still there. But I'm not going to get agitated. I'm not going to get caught, pulled into the entanglement with this kind of situation. I'll stay even and balanced through my warmth. So it's not aloof, but it's not being agitated by the situation. So the base one is loving kindness, or metta. And the most common translation into English is loving kindness. But there are other translations which could be used as well. Another one, a common one, is goodwill, which I used earlier. Benevolence. Sometimes friendliness is used. Gentle friendliness I've seen sometimes. In early, 100 years ago, English translators tried amity. Is that how you pronounce it? It's a word I don't speak, but I read in those old books. Amity, which means, like a friend. Like love. The idea of loving kindness, the word loving kindness has advantages because it has these two words, love and kindness. And the love suggests a warmth, a warm appreciation, a warm attitude towards something, heartfelt warmth, heartfelt attitude towards something. The kindness emphasizes that it's towards something. It's concern for someone's welfare, someone else's welfare. Your own, but it's concerned with the welfare of something. And this is a very important movement in loving kindness because, again, the movement of loving kindness is one where the direction of care, of concern, of love goes outwards, towards something, as opposed to sitting here waiting, I wish someone would love me. But rather kind of moves outward. And so even if you have kindness towards yourself, again, you're not sitting there as a victim to being lonely or a victim to being inadequate or a victim to something. But rather you're kind of taking responsibility for your mind, looking at what's skillful and unskillful. Self-pity is not a very skillful state to be in. It's not easy to let go of or to change, but through practice it can be changed. And one of the ways it changes is switch over and start initially very, very slowly perhaps and very haltingly, start cultivating, replacing it with loving kindness. Kindness towards oneself. So there's a direction of going outwards, in a sense, even though it's towards oneself, being outwardly directed, letting the glow, the flow, the warmth go outwards, as opposed to sitting and waiting for something to happen to you. So loving kindness, that compound, I think, works very well. It suggests the warmth. It's a very warm, satisfying feeling, the love part, and the kindness part, that it's concerned with the welfare of someone else or someone. And what's remarkable is that compassion as a form of love, when it's operating in a healthy way, also has this warm, satisfying feeling as part of it. Compassion also will have feeling of discomfort often because we're encountering someone who's suffering, which is uncomfortable. But together with that discomfort, there's also kind of what's holding it or what's relating to that in pure compassion is a sense of warmth. Warm, satisfying feeling. There's something very, very nice about it. So when the Dalai Lama and other people, Buddhists, say that if you want to be happy, have compassion for others, care for others, there's a variety of reasons for that. But one of the reasons is that simply it's a physiological fact that when the compassion is not messed up with anxiety or fear or things like that, that the compassion has a very kind of has a satisfying feeling. Feels right. Feels good. And then modern scientists have pointed out that in the states of pure compassion, again, that's not mixed up with anxiety and worry, that it seems that oxytocin is released in the body. You know, so there you go. A warm, satisfying feeling. This warm chemical that kind of goes off into the body. So to switch from unskillful states of mind to skillful states of mind, one of the options you have is to cultivate loving kindness. And in the teachings of the Buddha, this was strongly emphasized, to do that, to cultivate loving kindness and develop it. And it creates a very, very helpful foundation for doing all other Buddhist practice. It creates a helpful foundation for the practice of Buddhist ethics, because in Buddhist ethics doesn't come out of a should, some moralistic idea, but will naturally come out of this understanding, naturally come out of the point of view you have from the state of love. It's a foundation for meditation practice and mindfulness practice, because it's a lot easier to cultivate and develop mindfulness if there's a friendly attitude towards yourself and your experience than one of aversion or criticism or whatever, fear. So then Buddhists will practice and cultivate loving kindness. And there are specific practices for developing loving kindness, and they're the Brahmaviharas. And the central key to the practice of loving kindness is not eliciting some kind of warm, sympathetic, hallmark kind of feeling, but rather the key to what kind of turns the whole mind to healthy loving kindness is having the intention, an intention of goodwill. An intention is not a warmth. Intention is not a feeling. Intention is almost like a decision in the mind. It's a value in the mind. It's a priority in the mind that this is valuable. This is something that I want. This is something that I'm hoping for. So an intention of goodwill. It's my intention, my wish, that this person I'm thinking about, that person be happy. Even if you feel irritated by someone, which can happen, it doesn't mean that you can't at the same time feel goodwill toward them. I wish them well. In fact, some Buddhists I know will want their enemies to be happy, because then their enemies won't be their enemies anymore. They won't, if they're happy, they're not going to be irritating anymore. So sometimes it can be self-serving that way. But to have the intention. And so then we have to, again, know ourselves, know our minds, know our hearts, know our attitude and stuff, and know what our values are, what's important for us. And so that takes some reflection, some thinking. And once we kind of get a sense of our values and priorities and things like that, is it a value for you? Is there a priority for you to wish other people well? To have goodwill for them? Or is it a higher value for you to consider, what can I get from that person? What can this person do for me? Some people operate. Or another attitude people have is, how can I protect myself from those people? The first approach is, I'm not safe. Show me how I can be safe. Make me safe. Some of those attitudes are not very skillful or helpful in some situations. So are there better ways that we want to live? Are there other intentions we can have? And so are there intentions of goodwill, wishing someone well? And if you don't want to wish someone well, why? Look at that and be very honest about it. And try to question it. What are the assumptions, what are the values, what are the beliefs behind not wanting to wish somebody well? So maybe you want to start with people that who are not your enemies, someone who's not irritating you. But it could be someone in your family or neighbor or someone in your community who maybe is a neutral person, or maybe someone who's considered a friend. What's the degree of goodwill you have towards that person? What percentage of the time when you're relating to them are you relating from a wish that you're concerned for their wish for their welfare, for their happiness? Or what percentage of the time are you caught up in wanting something from them, or wanting to be seen by them a certain way, wanting to be And I find that it's a really beautiful thing to sit back, in a sense, and say, you know, it'd be really great if this person that I'm thinking about, or this person I'm with, if this person could be happy. For me, when I sit back, again, sitting back comes from a place of being somewhat relaxed, somewhat at ease. So that ease and that relaxation is very important. And then think, oh yeah. I like sometimes to take in the whole person, like at airports sometimes. It's really great at airports. Sometimes there's a lot of things you can do in airports. One of the things you can do in airports is notice how few people smile. And then you can ask, how often do I smile at the airport? You know, what state of mind are you at the airport? And sometimes I'll just sit there in the lounge, the airport lounge, and watch people walk by, and I look at their faces, and if they're happy and laughing and smiling, then I just feel the light. It's great. But if they're not, then I look at their faces and I imagine what their faces would look like if they were really happy. And then I think, you know, may it be so. This would be really great if this could be so. And now you might think this is a silly thing to do at airports. However, if I watch my own mind, if my mind left to its own devices, the things it would do at the airport, you know, are not so salutary, you know, and not so great. So sometimes, you know, it's a better thing, more useful, more, you know, better things to do. So what does it take? Another thing I like to do is to try to see the beauty in other people. One of the proximate cause for loving kindness is seeing the beauty in other people, or to see the potential beauty in other people, to see how beautiful they can be if they, can tap into places of freedom, of love, of relaxation, of ease, of joy. And so, as I've practiced Buddhism over these many years, I've seen that both through my intentional directing myself to this topic, but also unintentionally, kind of naturally, kind of moving in this direction, I'm more and more seeing what's beautiful in other people. And it's really something to be able to see past people's behavior, which sometimes is not so wonderful. It's really wonderful to see past people's outer appearance and all the different manifestations of outer appearance that people have, and look behind the outer appearance and see some inner beauty. I think it's really wonderful to see someone who's physically beautiful and look past it and see the inner beauty. It's really a beautiful thing to do, see past that. And it's also so wonderful to see someone who's not physically beautiful and look past that and see something beautiful there as well. And sometimes, once you can see something beautiful, you can see it shining through their eyes sometimes, or the sense there. And so that kind of intentionally kind of looking for that, taking time to look for that, is one of the conditions, and then can more easily arouse a wish of goodwill, wish of kindness, of wishing for people's welfare. So the key for turning on loving kindness has to do with intention. And in Buddhism, intention is sometimes called a seed. And the seeds you plant are consequential. The fruit that you harvest depends a lot on the seeds that you plant. So if you plant seeds of hate, watch out for the bitter fruits you'll harvest. But if you plant seeds of loving kindness, of goodwill, you plant wonderful fruits in return. So this takes some time. That's why sometimes meditation time is a good time for doing loving kindness practice. But it could be done at other times where you actually spend some time reflecting on what value you have for having goodwill towards others. And reflecting on how often do you actually intentionally have thoughts of goodwill for others. May that person be happy. May that person be safe. May that person be at ease. How often is that a concern when you're with someone? And are you, in the presence of other people, are you a force of promoting their welfare, or are you neutral, or are you detracting from it? And so, you know, what's happening with you, you know, if you're at dinner with someone? What's happening in that situation? Are you a force for their welfare? Are you neutral? Or are you a force for their, not for their welfare? And so what I'm trying to get to here is the idea of spending some time in your life, maybe together with friends, go for a walk with a friend or something, and actually think and reflect, journal, whatever you can do, about what the role and presence is in your life of having goodwill for other people. Is there, how often do you have the intention for other people to be happy? How often do you have the intention for the opposite? Is there value and priority for you to want to tap into feelings, intentions of goodwill for others? Do you want to make that a bigger part of your life or not? If you don't want to make it a bigger part of your life, why? I'm not saying it's, you know, that's not a moralistic question, but you know, the call in Buddhism is to be honest. So why is that? What's going on for you? And explore, maybe I'd suggest you explore, would it be advantageous to you to have more intentions and feelings and dispositions of goodwill as part of your life as you go through your life? And Buddhism says it's really beneficial for you to have more loving kindness for other people. Some people will think, well, gee, you know, there's nothing in it for me to love other people. You know, just thinking about them, you know, what's in it for me? You know, then I'm just thinking about other people and they're just going to push me over and take advantage of me and, you know, and what's in it for me? 11 benefits of loving kindness. The person who practices loving kindness sleeps happily, wakes happily, has no bad dreams, is loved by others, even though it's not so important if you're, you know, a furnace yourself. One is loved by non-humans. One is guarded by the devas. Fire, poison, or sword won't touch one. One's mind becomes concentrated quickly. One's complexion becomes clear. You save a lot of money. One dies with a mind free from confusion. And if no higher attainment is reached, one is reborn in the presence of Brahma, in those Brahma places. So maybe some of these benefits don't mean much for you, some of you, but 11 benefits. And so I find there's this wonderful mutuality in Buddhism, where as we care for others, we benefit. As we care for ourselves, others benefit. As we care for ourselves, we're more relaxed, more at ease. Our ability to care and have goodwill for others increases. As we care for others in healthy ways and have goodwill for others, then we benefit as well. And there's this wonderful mutual benefit club that Buddhism is. And everyone in the world is in the club. So that's nice. I hope that you will give some thought and consideration to love and loving kindness and see if there's easy and healthy, appropriate ways that you can tap into your love more often. Don't leave it a chance that it shows up by chance, but make it, cultivate and make it a regular visitor. Regularly invite it, regularly make it part of your life. So, thank you very much. We now have the potluck some of you might stay for. We have actually 2 minutes before the official ending of the Dharma talk time. In the spirit, the word loving kindness, metta, the cognate of the word metta is mitta. And one of the definitions of metta, there's several definitions, but one of them is a friendly attitude towards others, to be a friend towards others. And so in that spirit, in the last 2 minutes, I think it'd be really nice if you would turn to someone near you you didn't know, or, you know, the person you know least sitting close to you, and just say hello, introduce yourself. And then perhaps if they stay for the potluck, you get a chance to talk more.